I've got Dr. Rachel Morris in the studio with me. Good morning, Rachel.
Good morning, Lee.
Did you have a good night's sleep?
I had a really good night's sleep last night. I made sure I was in bed and light off at 11 o'clock.
Good. That is. And you slept. You didn't lie there thinking I should be asleep, but I can't sleep now.
I did.
Good. Because you're here to talk about sleep, which is one of the 8 steps of well-being. So before we go and talk about sleep, let's just talk about the 8 steps for a little bit. What are the 8 steps and who came up with these 8 steps?
Well, we'll be sort of talking about the 8 steps, I think, in the future
months.
They're something that actually I've come up with by myself, but they're based on a lot of research by other people. They're based on the 5 steps to well-being, which were developed in about 2008 by a group called the New Economics Foundation, and they were asked to look at wellness in the population because the government had done a big study and realised that actually there was a high proportion of the population that either had mental health issues or were what they called languishing.
Languishing. Victorian, isn't it?
Exactly. You don't really want to be one of those people who languish.
I don't want to be a languisher, no.
But they found that sort of only about 11% of the population were what they called flourishing. And that's, you know, really good mental health and actually really enjoying life and flourishing. So they decided to try and come up with a strategy to try and sort of shift the baseline of people's mental health, because they realised if you could just shift it by 5%, make people 5% better, you would drastically improve the amount of people who were flourishing and reduce the amount of people either who had mental health problems or were in the languishing category. So what they did was they took all the evidence about good mental health and what makes well-being, and they looked at it and they came up with the 5 ways to well-being, which is a little bit like the sort of 5 a day fruit
five
and veg.
Yes. Mental health.
Mental health, 5 a day fruit and veg.
So what were the 5?
So they were noticing and being grateful for things, being active, so, exercise and all that sort of thing. They've probably gone out of my head. Noticing, being active, constantly learning. So learning
That's
new things, learning and playing. They were
mindfulness. Would that be
mindfulness?
One?
Would be part of the noticing.
Ah, okay.
Noticing, being active, learning, connecting with people in good social.
So
situations.
Socializing, being out,
socializing, yeah. Connecting, and then there was.
Nutrition?
I mean, nutrition, eating well and sleeping well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What about connecting with nature? Is that mindfulness as well?
Connecting with anything you want. So connecting is all to do with connecting with people, but then you've got the connecting with nature would probably be along with noticing and being grateful.
They all make sense, really, when you think about it, don't you?
Yeah.
They're things that make up, you know, a good life.
Yeah.
Well, sleep we're going to talk about today, and sleep in particular. We all know if we've had a bad night's sleep, how that can impact you, not just during the following day, but actually for a couple of days afterwards. But what is a good night's sleep? What counts as a good night's sleep?
Well, they say a good night's sleep is around about 8 hours of sleep a night. Some people need a little bit more. Some people need a little bit less. So your average person needs about 8.
Is there something about noticing what's good for you? I know that I need 7. If I get more, that's great, but I can function quite happily on 7.
Yep. I think some people can get away with a lot less, so 4 hours a night.
You know,
famously, Margaret Thatcher could do 4 hours a night. Not many people can survive on 4 hours a night, it has to be said.
And do you need less sleep as you get older? Do children need more sleep?
Yeah, definitely. And as you get older, there's also things that influence the quality of your sleep as well, like certain medications that you might be on. And generally, your metabolism slows down a bit and you generally actually do need less sleep as you're older. You're often a little bit less active as well as you get older, hence less sleep. But there tend to be more interferences to your sleep as you grow older.
So let's look at what would make a bad night's sleep and what would make a good night's sleep. What are you likely to have done that would give you a bad night's sleep?
Well, there are several things that can affect your sleep. Firstly, the thing that most people think about is caffeinated drinks. If you have drunk lots and lots of coffee throughout the day, you are likely to have quite a bad night's sleep. I mean, there are some people that say to me, you know what, I can drink coffee all day and I'm absolutely fine, which some people can, I think, if they have a really high level of tolerance to caffeine,
yes.
But most people can't. And I think what people don't realise about caffeine, it has a very long half-life, which a half-life is how long it takes for half of the product to be eliminated from your body. So caffeine has a six-hour half-life. So if you have a strong cup of coffee at midday, half of that caffeine will still be in your body at 6 o'clock at night.
Wow.
And half of that caffeine will still be in your body at midnight.
Wow.
I didn't know that. That's amazing.
So would you recommend, what point would you say, beyond which point, you would recommend people not having caffeine if they want a good night's sleep?
Lunchtime.
Lunchtime?
Yeah.
Lunchtime.
Oh, that's quite tough.
Yeah. I would never have thought that. I'd have been like 2 o'clock.
Mm. Yes, a little later.
Yeah.
And it depends, you know, if you've given up caffeine and then you have a caffeinated drink, it'll probably affect you more than if you've built up your tolerance to it.
Yes, because I know people who go to bed with a cup of coffee, you know.
Yes, exactly. You say they, my husband can do that. Doesn't seem to affect him at all.
My husband can too.
Yeah.
So caffeine will give you a bad night's sleep.
Yes.
What else?
Yeah. Caffeine will stimulating your mind just before you go to bed. And then there's two reasons why that's a problem. Firstly, your mind is just going round and round and thinking about things. Secondly, the main way we tend to stimulate our minds before we go to bed these days is by using screens. And there's a lot of evidence that shows that the blue light from the screens interferes with our melatonin. And melatonin is a really important hormone that helps us sleep. And so if we're looking at blue light screens, our levels of melatonin aren't rising at the right levels, and we then find it hard to drop off. Now, they've tried to get around this, and I've actually got an app on my phone, and I think the new iPhone means that you can actually change the colour of your screen. And I think about 10 o'clock at night, my screens turn sort of a sepia colour.
Oh, they think of everything.
They do, but I haven't found that makes a lot of difference to me.
No.
I think the thing about looking at screens before you go to bed is the emails and the texts and the things that keep popping in. And so make your mind think, oh, crumbs, I haven't thought about that meeting tomorrow and there's this going on. So I think, yes, avoid screens because of the blue light, but also it tends to stimulate your mind much more than maybe reading a calming book.
I was going to say, you know, I like to read before I go to sleep, and I've always done that. And that I find that, it's stimulating, but it's tiring. I can put the book down and I feel, I can go to sleep now.
As long as you're not reading a thriller that's going to keep you up all night. Wondering what's going on.
I find I need to read fiction because when I read a fact book before I go to bed, I'm then thinking about it. Mm. And I find it harder to settle, whereas if I have fiction, as you said, Lee, I then start feeling like I'm dropping off and I need to put it down.
It's easier to cut off. So caffeine and screens.
Yep.
Anything alcohol, I'm presuming.
Alcohol, yes. Now, people get a bit confused about alcohol because some people do find that if I have the drink at night, it helps them drop off a little bit. Or if you had a copious amount of alcohol, you know, often you do fall asleep very quickly. The thing with alcohol, it really interferes with your sleep early in the morning. So later in the night, you sleep much more shallowly. And you also, it's a diuretic, so you have a full bladder, you get uncomfortable sleep. So actually, the evidence shows that more than a couple of glasses and your sleep is really affected later in the night. It's not dropping off as the problem, it's later in the night.
So yes, you might fall asleep quickly, but around about 2 or 3 in the morning, your sleep.
Yeah, we all
changes.
Know after you've had a few drinks, you know, the next morning you feel really tired, even if you've got a lot of sleep, don't you? It's
It really affects you, doesn't it? You feel a bit dulled.
And it's the sleep at 3 or 4 a.m. that's the problem, not the early evening sleep.
So screens, alcohol, caffeine, good.
Not good. Anxiety, I think, is one thing. Anxiety and stress is one of the major sleep killers. So either you don't drop off very well because you're worrying about stuff the next day, or you then wake up early with stuff going around your mind. And actually, one of the symptoms of depression is poor sleep.
So obviously, for a good night's sleep, it's cutting out all of those things. So cutting out caffeine past midday, you're saying, more than 2 glasses of alcohol. Don't look at a screen before you go to bed. Yeah. Try and lead if it's possible, a stress-free life. Is there anything, rather than not doing things, is there things you can do, positive things?
Yeah, there are several things that you can do, and we call these sleep hygiene. This is sleep hygiene. The first one is reading a book or something calming before bed. and trying really to get yourself in as a relaxed state as possible. There's lots of different ways to doing that, and some people use relaxation tapes. There's lots of mindfulness practices that you can do. There's something called progressive muscular relaxation, where you're sort of tensing and releasing your muscles to get yourself a really relaxed state. Some people swear by having a sort of warm, milky drink before they go to bed, as long as it doesn't have any caffeine in it. And you've got to remember that hot chocolate, could contain caffeine. Probably does contain.
You're spoiling it all, Rachel.
I'm sorry. I tend to have a red bush tea actually late at night because I find that's quite a
and
nice.
And chamomile, especially.
Yeah, chamomile,
very,
isn't great,
nice,
isn't it?
Yeah. So things like hot baths can, you know, relax people. Make sure your room is really dark. Because that means that the lights, you don't get woken up by light in the morning. If you've got a partner that snores, you might want to...
I know all about that.
Yeah, well, that can really... that is a real problem, actually. That can affect things as well. So make sure you've got earplugs and you've got some...
A spare room.
Or something. A spare room.
There's no half measures.
Yeah, and there is something about making your bedroom a bit of a sanctuary rather than a workplace. So if you can... have your work, your office, your desk somewhere that's not your bedroom, that's helpful as well. I know that's a luxury, not everybody can do that, but you know, really make your bedroom into somewhere that is conducive to getting a good night's sleep,
so that when you walk into the room, everything is saying to you, this is the place that you're going to rest.
Yeah.
And you alluded to it earlier that lack of sleep was one of the symptoms of depression, or could even, I suppose, lead to depression. Because it's not just about feeling fresh and bright, is it? If you perpetually have a lack of sleep, it has long-term effects.
Yeah, I think so. Constant sleep deprivation. I mean, we all know what's that like. What that's like when you've had a small baby and you just, you know, you feel absolutely exhausted. It can affect your performance massively. Several nights sleep disturbed in a row can have the same effect on you as missing an entire night of sleep. And so they've likened it to having a certain amount of alcohol in your blood being sleep deprived, which causes all sorts of things, causes car accidents, all sorts. You would never expect a pilot to fly when they've got alcohol in their system, but we expect ourselves to do all sorts of things on a lack of sleep and with sleep deprivation.
Well, it is a form of torture, of course, well, sleep deprivation.
Yes,
you know the effects of it.
Absolutely. But as well as the sort of, it's not just all about the negative stuff. I think it's about the positive effects of sleep, because sort of hundreds of years ago, they used to think when you went to sleep, you just switched off and that was it. Your brain switched off for the night, it rested, and then it started again. But now with the, you know, medical technology, EEGs, it's shown that your brain is actually really active during sleep. And there's something about what our brain does when we're asleep that's really, really important for our performance during the day. So they think what the brain does is lay down memories, takes memories out of your short-term memory, sort of process them, puts them into your long-term memory. And actually sleep has a massive function in problem solving.
Wow. There's a healing quality of sleep as well. If you're feeling a bit rotten, or you've got a cold or flu, when you sleep, you often feel better when you wake up. The body repairs itself, is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's really important for repair. It's really important for the immune system. All those things, you know, you can solve just by getting good sleep. In fact, you know, I was reading the other day that Bill Clinton is quoted as saying that every single mistake he made was after he'd had a lack of sleep.
Wow, I'm going to blame that for...
Yes.
And where do you stand on napping? Rachel.
Well, there is some evidence that napping can be helpful as well. I mean, in our culture now, we don't tend to nap during the day. But in sort of hotter countries, they do have that built into their culture, and often things stop over the day. It seems to be that naps actually, as long as it's sort of less than half an hour to an hour, can be very helpful. The problem is sleeping for longer than that during the day is that you can get into the really deep sleep cycle, and then you... have problems waking up. And also, if you're having a lot of problems with insomnia, then it's probably not helpful to sleep during the day, because that then might affect the quality of sleep during the night.
There is something about a power nap sometimes. There's a 5 minutes, I was saying earlier, sometimes just a 5 minute nap, and you can feel immensely refreshed, almost as if you've had 12 hours sleep.
Yeah. I heard that Winston Churchill used to have to take power naps, but he used to hold onto his keys, and as soon as he felt his keys drop, he'd wake up.
Yeah, that's good.
So it's just a small little nap can be very restorative. I'm not very good at napping, because I just want to sleep for 4 hours when I do that. Some people really need it.
We've got some questions coming in for you from Judith Salmon. Hi, Rachel. I've got two questions. First is that we've got colour-changing light bulbs in the bedroom. What colour light is the best to have on to encourage sleep? And the second question, normally a pretty good sleeper, but early in the week I woke up as I was anxious about a course. In this situation, which scenario would get you back to sleep quicker? Just resting in bed or getting up and making a cup of tea? That's a good question, isn't it? If you do wake up, what do you do? Do you just lie there or do you get up and watch some TV? So one is about the colour of light in your room, a light bulb. And the second, what do you do when you do wake up?
Let's take that last question first. I think if you're lying in bed for hours and hours worrying about the fact you're not sleeping, that's not very helpful. So they do say just get up, do something else. Get up, maybe go into another room, read a book for a bit, and then go back to bed and try sleeping again. If you're waking up because you're anxious about things, what can be helpful is just have a pad of paper by your bed. So you write down what you're anxious about and sort of park it so you go back to it in the morning. So that helps for some people.
Yes, you've expelled it in a way.
So you're not worrying about, oh, I've got to remember to do that tomorrow because you've written it down. It's down, it's out of your brain, you know what to do. So those sorts of things can be helpful. You know, if you find you are being very anxious and ruminating, you're waking up early quite a lot, then I would say visit your doctor and have a chat about the anxiety and make sure you get they talk to you about the possibility of depression, etc., etc.
But in the short term, just writing something down will help. What about this question about light, colour-changing light bulbs? I didn't even know there were such... I know there are different light bulbs, but...
I think you can get these alarm clocks that sort of come on very slowly.
Oh,
and
yes, the sleep ones. They wake you up naturally.
I'm not sure about which colour helps. What I would say is make sure you're not having a bluey colour evenings when the... And obviously... Don't sleep with the light on, so presumably when you're asleep you wouldn't have anything on. And then you get these ones that gradually
wake you up. They sound like a good idea.
I think they can be quite good. And then I guess some people who have seasonal affective disorder have these light boxes that have very bright lights that then help them during the day.
And you must be able to get the reverse, or a light that starts bright and then fades.
I would
think so. If you want to snuggle down with the light on, and then it would fade, so you're not sleeping in the light. By the time you fall asleep, it's dark.
Yeah, and I would suggest a light that has predominantly yellowy tones rather than bluey tones for that.
Lovely. Well, thank you, Rachel. If people want to find out more about you and these 8 steps of well-being, where should they go?
So if you have a look at my website, which is www.rachelmorris.org, you can find out more about me. And get in contact with me, email me if you have any questions. And
excellent. And you're going to come in and talk about another of the steps of well-being in a month's time. Yep, we haven't decided which one yet.
Maybe you're going to listen to poll what they want to hear about.
But we'll be speaking to you in 3 or 4 weeks. Thank you. And that website again, it's rachelmorris.org. Thank you, Rachel.
You're welcome.
Lovely to speak to you.